And here we go.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
What do you propose?
It's simple. Kill the Batman.
I have a soak, Hunter.
You gotta have a soak. Hello and welcome back once again to the Box Shift Podcast. I'm your host, Alex, joined, as always, by Curtis. And back from his sabbatical, we have Stein. How's it going?
Hello.
Did you enjoy your time away at South By?
I did. My vacation for the year.
The platinum badge paid off in spades?
It did. It did.
Excellent. Benner's out.
We'll get to that.
Benner's out this week, presumably recovering from the last podcast. I don't know if he's woken up since his drunk ranting of this past Saturday night.
He didn't want to be on this podcast because it was just too much like The Dark Knight. And I can see where he's coming from.
It's true. Because this is the podcast, not the one the internet deserves. What's the line?
It's not the one the internet needed, it's the one that it deserves.
In that we are too much, so he'll hunt us, because we can take it.
Because he's a lone guardian.
A watchful protector. All right, and also...
A Benner.
Also with this, we got a buddy sitting in, as we do from time to time, just to have some friends come on here and shoot the shit with us. We got our friend Hatley. How's it going, man?
Hello.
Listening to the sultry sounds.
So I'm not going to be a regular? I'm just a special guest?
You can be, man. You know.
Can I not replace Benner?
I don't know.
Well, let's take
a vote. Are you okay with that?
That would.
I know I've got one vote.
It'd be a bit too much like The Dark Knight Rises, I think.
So. I don't know if you bring it as much inherent material to the table as Ben does.
So, yeah, we've
does
got...
Does he listen to these?
Yeah.
Well, then I was totally kidding, Benner.
He's already had an aneurysm probably by this point. Love you, buddy. Can't wait to have you back. So we have a gauntlet of shit to discuss on this week's edition. We'll go ahead and start off, Stein, if you want to walk us through just some of the shit and sights and films you saw at South By. Hit us with what was good, what was memorable.
Pretty good average this year, only 13 films in total. I was working during the days for the first few parts and had to work the fucking day job during the rest, but... Saw a lot of great shit. The highlight, actually, for me, even though movies is really the only part I care about, was the one concert I saw. Dave Grohl and fucking John Fogerty. Got there too late, missed Stevie Nicks, but seeing almost pushing 70 John Fogerty come out and rock the fucking house for an hour was great. Saw a lot of great films. Personal favorite, and I hope it gets distribution. If it does, you can talk about it when it does eventually, but was Rewind This, an awesome documentary. Saw Spring Breakers. Do we want to talk about that now?
We'll go into that in a little bit.
Yeah, all thoughts on Spring Breakers later. I'm going to see it again this weekend, so that should at least give you an idea of what I thought of it.
Nice.
Where's the techie going?
Jake's stepping out of the studio for a moment.
Somebody's got to push the button in place.
Saw Evil Dead.
Saw Evil Dead, was incredibly disappointed by the Evil Dead, just yet another mediocre horror remake, you know. Here's the thing about the Evil Dead, and I forget the name of the director, and I don't care enough to look it up at the
moment. Fede Alvarez or something like that?
Maybe. He was Hispanic, but it is well-directed in the sense of, like, very stylish. The guy's definitely got an eye for creating imagery on screen. And it was just kind of things like, I'd like to see what this guy could do with original material, not, you know, another goddamn remake of a 25-year-old horror movie that, you know, everybody loves. And the really weird thing is Bruce Campbell was, and I didn't know this until going in and they talked about it at the Q&A, Bruce Campbell was apparently from day one heavily involved in the film. I mean, from the writing to production to casting to in the editing room, like how he said Bruce Campbell was making suggestions on the final sound mix. And so for him to be this heavily involved in how I think, and the general mood also, I think, of how badly it turned out, it was kind of like, really? So, I mean, the highlight of any film you see at a film festival should never be the stars doing the Q&A. A lot of people go to these just as, oh, I saw a movie star in person. It should be the film, not the people who made it coming on to do questions for 20 minutes. The highlight of that night was seeing Bruce Campbell in person, and that should never be the case.
So considering his involvement, you're kind of surprised with how it turned out?
I was, yeah, because the guy knows his stuff, and you know he knows how important Evil Dead is to its fans and how much they cherish it. So to be involved in this, I'll give it this, it played very well with a lot of the audience who I think were horror fans, and it's a gore fest, so I mean the kind of visceral reaction to it was great, but I just thought it was a flat out mediocre effort.
I remember Wade, when we first started this, we talked about the trailer for it. When is its actual theatrical release supposed to be?
April 5th. Yeah. So 2 weeks.
Curtis, are you at all interested in it?
And no one's going to see it because it's WrestleMania weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean,
No, I really want to see it. I'm a big fan of the first one, more so than I am the second or the third one. So
we can revisit it here in a couple weeks then, because I'll take on it.
I'm interested.
Well, I was hoping to be part of Hatley's birthday weekend this year.
Is that
Friday at the Pluckers going to? Kind of like last year when we saw.
Are you promoting your party on our podcast?
Yes.
Was this your
Everyone's
intention?
Invited.
Hashtag.
Except for you, Elena. I'm kidding. You can come, but no.
Just X your hands.
I want to see it. I mean, the trailer reminds me of Cabin in the Woods, kind of. I don't know if y'all get that, which is what we saw last year.
There is a cabin in the woods in it. To be perfectly fair.
Yeah, I really like Cabin in the Woods, but I mean. A little bit of I saw the trailer that kind of reminded me of that. Because I didn't know what the Cabin in the Woods was going to be until I saw it. And it
I'll
was
tell
awesome.
You what, another from South by real disappointment, and judging by how much money it made last week, and everybody agreed to me, this the incredible Burt Wonderstone.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of y'all caught it.
I watched about half of it. I've heard nothing good about it.
There's a few laughs scattered throughout, but overall it's just kind of like, wow, this is... No comedy is a completely 100% hit. I mean, every comedy's hit and miss, but this is shockingly low ratio of laughs.
Mm. The next project by the Burt Wonderstone guys is a reboot of the Christmas Vacation franchise with Rusty as the patriarch.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll get off the ground after it's Burt Wonderstone's opening weekend.
It did shit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it did like $10 million.
I tore 10 tickets Friday night for it.
Luckily, it was super cheap to make.
But still, when you have a heavily promoted comedy with Steve Carell and Jim Carrey, that's bad news.
Especially, just like we were talking about last week, this is Jim Carrey's first movie in how long?
4 years.
4 years? Something like that? So
Poppers.
He did that, yeah.
It was like Poppers in like 2010 or 11.
Who cares? You'll pay to see it. Fuck you. That's the mantra of WrestleMania this year.
Jim Carrey is funny, but he's not in it hardly enough. And I'll tell you, Alan Arkin gets the biggest laugh in the movie, but it's something that was funny to me, and I imagine would be funny to everyone here, but maybe not necessarily to...
Yeah.
It's impossible to explain unless you've seen it, but I can't recommend it. So.
Well, maybe if Jim Carrey did this, maybe that gives me hope that he'll do a Dumb and Dumber 2.
He's supposed to be.
Well, he... No, they didn't... He... didn't feel everyone was into it, so he said he wasn't going to do it, but hopefully they'll revisit that and he'll do it, because I would really love to see Dumb and Dumber 2.
I also think that no matter...
Jeff Daniels is the one working more consistently these days. So.
Yeah. No matter how, you know, how well the rest of Jim Carrey's career does or doesn't go, he'll always be able to hold him over a barrel with regards to Dumb and Dumber. So he could stop that thing from ever happening. He's that project's Bill Murray.
Alright. Well, sounds like an eventful South by.
It was. Great movies. A lot of free alcohol.
There you go.
Dopamine. That's
the,
lady,
the ladies
awesome.
Were out.
Seeing the world on someone else's dime.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's the American dream right there.
There you go. That's the the Evan Bourne lifestyle.
And it's done now, so all the fucking L.A. and New York people can leave our fucking town.
God damn, that's no shit. There were...
What do? I work in social media. So you've never had a job. It's like anyone who ever says, like, oh, I'm in social media, I want to do the scene from Jaws where Quint grabs Richard Dreyfuss's hands. He's like, these are city hands. They're soft hands. You've never worked a day in your life. I don't need this working class hero crap.
It's really cool the way that Quint also sounds like Harvey Fierstein when you do an impression of him.
Hey, you close your eyes and thought Robert Shaw's ghost was in this room. Hey, I'm me. You want the shock?
You know who Harvey Fierstein is?
No.
He's probably his brother from Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's in Independence Day,
there's
right?
a rumor that he's gay.
Get out. That's that Simpsons line. Who's gay in Hollywood? Harvey Fierstein. No!
Oh, my God.
All right, well, dramatically switching gears here. One of the big reasons we got our buddy Hadley on this week is he's been kind enough to treat us to tickets to Houston Rockets game on Friday night.
Now, they're a professional basketball franchise, if I understand correctly.
Believe it or not.
Correct. They have the afros. They spin the balls.
Whistle.
So, yeah, we're going to Houston on Friday. So,
my condolences.
When's tip-off?
Yeah, that's 7.
The tip-off to when we're going to get to Houston is going to be all the smog.
So,
All right, I'll give it to him. We got one in.
So, tip-off
is a shithole.
Tip-off's at 7. So, that means around 10:30, I'll be doing my favorite thing to do when I'm in Houston. And that is
leaving.
So
I'm breathing a little bit better.
Hallie, who are they playing? The Cavs?
Cleveland Cavaliers, your hometown.
That's not my hometown.
Well, you know what I mean.
Home state. I get it.
Name one other city in Ohio.
Lima. That's where Elson is from. So, Hatley, hit us with a preview of the game. Because, I'm sorry, we should have predicated this too. Hatley's a big sports nut. Unlike, you know, Stein and myself, who are fans of the greatest sport on earth, professional wrestling, and
Sport of Kings.
Not to mention Curtis, who's not a big sports fan either.
So yeah,
I like hockey. Don't keep up with it, but I like hockey.
So we got a real sports guy on here this week, and hit us with the preview of the game. What's going down?
Two teams. One's in the playoffs. One is not. Cleveland. I'll tell you how bad they are. They were ahead by 27 points tonight. Against the Miami Heat in the third quarter, 27 points, that's a lot.
Yeah.
They lost by 3 points. That's terrible.
That's pretty rough.
But it is Miami, the Heat. I mean, that's their 24th win in a row.
You've got to tell me about the extra thing that makes it special. Like, what Ohio was in the process of nearly undoing when they went on to lose.
You're talking about the streak?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Heat. They won 23 in a row, and they were going, which is the second best streak in NBA history, only to the Lakers in the 70s, had 33 games in a row they won. And by all accounts, they should have lost tonight, and Cleveland gave it up.
Shit the bed.
In a big way, yeah.
You were saying that this is like one of the best Houston lineups in a while, right? Their team's really good. Is that what?
Yeah, since the mid-90s. Pretty much. I mean, they had Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady back in the day, but those two guys spent more time on the injury list than they did on the court.
They've got a box shift favorite, James Harden, after seeing him in Houston with his gigantic ass girlfriend.
Y'all are lucky.
Were they always the Rockets?
No, they're always the Rockets. They used to be the San Diego Rockets.
Okay.
And then they moved to Houston.
No, it was football. Houston was
the Oilers.
And then they moved to Tennessee.
Right. And they were still the Oilers. And then
they became the Titans.
They became the Titans, but they never lost that Texas spirit where they don't win things.
they've done better than the Houston Texans have. I'll throw it out there.
Just a dig.
Yeah, I hate the Texans. We'll get into that in a few. The Rockets tonight, they beat Utah. They're basically winning that basically puts them in the playoffs. They're four games ahead of Utah now. So they're going to make the playoffs, which is really good. I mean, they're the youngest team in the league, and they're in the playoffs, but that's hard to do. So they've got a lot of hope, and they've got a lot of cap space in the offseason to hopefully sign somebody big or trade for somebody big to help them out. But, yeah, they're looking pretty good right now. James Harden is a beast. He's fifth in the league in scoring with 26.3 a game. And he's averaging 5 rebounds and 6 assists a game. So that's pretty good. Pretty good average. He's a star. He's a superstar. And that's something that Houston hasn't had since Yao Ming. And they also have Jeremy Lin.
Lin Sanity.
And now it's Beard Sanity with James Harden and Jeremy Lin. It'll be a fun game. They're not a great team. They're terrible on defense. The four of us, or the five of us, if you count Jake, we could probably score 100 on them. They're terrible, but they're also really good at scoring, so it'll be a fun game.
Curtis, are you going to do blackface and do the beard for James Harden?
You
should at least do the
mohawk. I've actually wanted to have a blackface costume for a couple of years
that
now.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I've wanted to be Omar from The Wire for years, and I've been talked about it.
Dude,
I talked
you
out
be
of it.
Steven from Django for Halloween.
Oh, jeez, that would be so awesome. Dude, there are times when Samuel L. Jackson is so dark in that movie that I'm not convinced that he was also...
Was that
not
like a
wearing blackface. Like, I don't know, he just looks comically dark at times, and it's really distracting.
You already kind of walk like him, so that'd be be good costume.
Speaking of
and
which,
much like in the movie, no one's entirely sure of how old you are.
I just imagine when him and Ben are getting alone, Curtis drops the voice, and he's just like, so here's what Stein was saying about you tonight. speaking of Halloween, friend
Thank
of mine.
You, Brandon. You're welcome, Brandon.
Friend of mine, Brody, we decided we're going to be Austin Aries and Bobby Roode out of shape for Halloween this year. It's going to be glorious. I got to figure out how to grow my beard out like Aries. But back to the matter, back to the lecture at hand, as Dr. Dre would say. Hallie, who's winning on Friday?
I would hope Houston, but they've played pretty terribly these last few games. They were up by 23 tonight against Utah. And the Jazz came within 4 points towards the end. They lost by 30 the other night at home to the Warriors. They played pretty terribly these last few games. And I'm not sure how the Cavaliers are going to come back from giving up a 27-point lead. But hopefully they lay down for the Rockets on Friday, because I don't want to drive all the way out there and then watch them lose.
But you know how it is with the Warriors. They just come out and play.
What is it?
It's the movie The Warriors. That's what they say to them.
That's okay. Supposedly an improv line, too. Mm-hmm. Is it?
Warriors is really awesome.
But yeah, Houston, Toyota Center. That really, literally, though, that's like one of my favorite arenas that I've been to.
It's a great building.
Yeah.
There's not a bad seat in the house.
We were there a few months ago for the 20th anniversary of Raw.
Nosebleeds, still good seats.
We'll be there in December for TLC, which will presumably be headlined by The Miz and Jack Swagger at this rate. So, not much to tell.
Spoiler, Cena wins.
Cena will win. So that's something to look forward to.
Houston's a...
shithole?
Yeah. I've only been there to fly out of Houston to go to Costa Rica, and I've been there for a Rockets game before.
I'm trying to think if for a time I've been there not for a wrestling show. I went there for a friend's wedding.
I had a family there, so I mean, I've been there a few times. There are some nice parts to Houston, like there are to every city, but there's just something about it.
It smells bad.
Yeah.
It's just gross.
It's humid. You walk outside and it hurts to breathe in the summer. It's just...
But of course, one of the best weekends of my life was spent there.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, at this point, I only go to Houston for wrestling and when I have to see them. So
that's why you should go anywhere, right?
Why else would you travel?
Oh, I've also been there for Brooks and Dunn and Alan Jackson concert. Don't leave that out.
How are we friends?
Brooks and Dunn.
Brooks and Dunn's awesome.
They're good.
Okay.
Have you ever listened?
Yes. They sound like every other country.
No, they don't.
I was done with them the first time I heard them.
Oh.
Hello. were they well done?
Curtis wrote that joke for me.
I would never write a joke about Brooks and Dunn.
Really?
Yep.
You got one brewing in your mind right now, don't you?
I wish I did. I don't.
There's a Cinemark gap?
Yeah. Whenever people are like...
Just imagine it's the calendar with a... Well, I don't want to drop names here, but you know who I'm talking about. Let's say December.
People don't know what they're talking about sometimes, and you need to show them that they don't. That's why I need it.
Oh, the app. Are you... Start telling people you're in social media, and you work with apps.
Yeah.
All right, so from the sport of basketball to the sport of mixed martial arts, we covered the George St. Pierre-Nick Diaz title fight. On Saturday, nothing really new to talk about, but the drug test from the last event in Japan, which I believe was UFC on FX8 or some shit. UFC on Fuel 8, I'm sorry. Anyway, the biggest news was Bruce Leroy, Alex Karrasis, whatever. Who gives a shit?
Alex Karras is dead. He can't have been there.
Okay, Bruce Leroy got popped for weed. Now, this would be just the latest in a rash of MMA fighters to test positive for weed. As opposed to just focusing on that, I figured we can make a interesting little discussion here. And just since we were talking about basketball, Hatley's a huge football guy. The ever-present problem of marijuana and professional sports and how it's become, they're trying to make trying to eliminate the problem much more seriously now. Curtis, we haven't heard from you in a while. You know, I think we all agree weed's not the worst thing in the world. Do you think professional sports in this country have things they need to worry about more than athletes doing weed, pot?
I mean, it's
the reefer.
It's not a performance enhancer. I'm sure if someone is smoking weed, you know, at least it's not the furthest thing from, you know, legal. It's not the furthest thing from legal that they could have possibly done. I mean, it's not really an ethical violation of sorts, or, you know, not to the same extent that, like, these other performance enhancers are, because they're more deliberate violations of certain rules and codes, because, like, it doesn't make you stronger.
Example or point of discussion for combat sports, MMA, boxing. I think the fact that they punish guys who get popped for weed the same way they would punish a guy who tests positive for anabolic steroids is ridiculous. Because, you know, if you're juiced up, you know, that you can seriously, that does enhance your performance, and you can fuck a guy up worse than if you just had smoked a joint before. So
yeah, fuck yourself up.
Hatley, we were talking about earlier, Ricky Williams is probably the first example that comes to mind of football. Do you think this pot thing is... Do you think the problem is going to go away, or do you think the punishing bodies and the people at the helm should kind of cool off on it?
I mean...
Or do you think these pro athletes should just grow the fuck up and realize they can't do that?
And they should just wait until their career's over. I mean, they're going to make millions of dollars. They're going to screw it up if they smoke it. I mean... Even if it's legalized soon, which, as conservative as I am, I think it should be legalized. It's
That's still decades off. There's still such a stigma with it.
But even if it's legalized, I don't think, at least in season, they shouldn't do it, because it impairs skills requiring eye-hand coordination and fast reaction time. Apparently, I've never actually done it, but it lasts up to 24 to 36 hours. And I think in season, I mean, that could affect your play. Maybe not football, because, you know, you play once a week, but basketball, baseball, you play almost every day.
I could see being a coach or a team owner or representative, and I'd be pissed off with it's like, well, you know, you're doing this shit and it's slowing you down, you know, it's doing, you know, you're here to fucking play. Mm-hmm. I think, for me, the hypocrisy in taking sports out of the argument in a way, with weed versus alcohol. It's like our country and popular culture in this country so celebrates alcohol and drinking and all that, you know, and commercials for decades have always, oh, if you drink, you know, you're at the club and it's sexy and everything. And, you know, when teams win big games, they pour champagne over each other's heads. And alcohol is worse for you in every way than marijuana. I mean, neither one is exactly healthy for you, but alcohol is worse, and it's celebrated in this country. But marijuana, because it, and it is, it's a drug, is, you know, vilified. I just think it's
You're Slater from Dazed and Confused if you smoke weed. You're a bum.
You'll never be anything more.
You kind of, I am inclined to agree with you, Hatley, on that. Well, both of y'all, but also I think at this rate, players know they're going to get tested and shit like that. It pretty much falls on them. It's their responsibility.
It's foolish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also a huge difference between, like, forsaking your own body at the expense of no one but yourself and doing it, you know, having the potential to harm your opponent, like, you know, with other sort of quote-unquote, well, you know, with the performance enhancers as opposed to, like, weed, which will never be a performance enhancer no matter what they want you to say.
I think it is kind of unfair, too, it's kind of apples and oranges here, saying, you know, weed and MMA and then weed and football and other more refined and classically defined sports, whereas, especially MMA, when you're going to be fighting a guy, it's pretty dumb to get high beforehand. Yeah. So,
even though it's work. You still need to be on your guard.
That's the old Nick Diaz legend when he fought Takanori Gomi. And somehow he smoked a joint right before the fight and went out there. And the Nevada State Athletic Commission said it made him impervious to pain. Like, so.
There's people who have always said that smoking right before you work out apparently is like an incredible feeling and gives you. I don't know if it actually physically does anything, but apparently gives you an incredible workout.
Let's get Curtis stoned and send him on a 5K. we'll see what happens.
As he speed walks in his Ned Flanders skin tight suit.
Yeah, my opinion is wait until your career is over. Ricky Williams lost millions and millions of dollars because that wasn't the only reason why he retired early.
Yeah.
But
it's the only reason people remember.
Yeah, but he was at the height of his career. He was probably the best running back in the league, 1,800 yards, 1,900 yards rushing every year, and he threw it away in Miami.
And what happened to him?
He just retired. He just quit right before the season started, and his teammates were pissed. I mean, rightfully so. Run. But yeah, he just quit. Right? Yeah, he just quit and. Well, it gave millions and millions and millions of dollars. He came back a few years ago and played for the Dolphins again, and then later for the Ravens. And he was decent, but he didn't. He was never the same, obviously, because he was older. But he lost a lot of money. Just wait until your career's over.
Kind of switching gears here. It's the Box Show. We've got to talk about wrestling, but this is kind of still in the same vein. Stein, they have gotten so serious about cracking down on pot in professional wrestling over the past few years. They were pretty hard on it even before You Know Who Did You Know What, right? Was Van Damme the big one that they, like, started cracking down?
Well, Van Damme was, his whole thing was, you know, just the stupidity of being pulled over, driving stoned and, you know, having
without a shirt on
with the shirt while he was the champion.
Don't you think, especially in that business, not sport, but there's far greater things to be worrying about?
There are much, much greater things to be worrying about. Fucking painkillers still, you know? You can't separate it from the cultural argument about marijuana, though. I mean, it's so much bigger than, should it be in professional sports? Should it be in wrestling, you know? It's just the idea of, again, it goes back, why do we celebrate alcohol? Why is, you know...
And then
this here too. I mean, with the Jack Swagger thing, yeah, I'll still bitch about that. It's like everyone has to play by the same rules. I don't necessarily agree with the rules. I mean, Brett in his book a few years ago said, you know, let the guys sit in their fucking hotel rooms and smoke pot where they're not hurting anybody and they're relaxing, unwinding. Because otherwise, they're mixing painkillers and fucking downers
with
alcohol.
Yeah,
yeah. So.
I was going to say that, though. That
but they're a publicly traded company, so they have investors to answer to.
Homeboy here, the guy, the reason this discussion came up, Bruce Lee, Roy got popped, and he's going to get fined and suspended from his sport.
Bruce Lee, Roy.
He was the fighter that tested positive for it, the whole reason we got into this discussion.
For marijuana.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, though, is, you know, that's cut and dry. They have a system, and once you get caught, you get caught, whereas this Jack Swagger thing
is... Is he a big name?
No, but it happens all the same. It'd be much more highly public.
He does have a legacy, well, though. He was the last dragon, and he did possess the power of them all.
Help me out here. Who's the big name?
Okay, like when Chael Sonnen got popped for roids, like that was a huge deal, but he got the same punishment that a lower card guy would get.
Okay, so if Chael Sonnen got busted with pot tomorrow, would it be the same thing, or would it be the Swagger situation where it's just like, well, I mean, this guy's going to be on our next card and he's going to make us a shit ton of money.
That's actually a fantastic
example. Not that anybody's ever said Jack Swagger's going to make us a shit ton of money.
That's a fantastic example because Chael Sonnen's headlining the next title fight.
So yeah,
I don't know, that'd be...
I stumbled into that one.
Yeah, Chael, we'll get to him in a little bit. But yeah, the Swagger thing... This is just the bigger problem with the Ease Wellness policy. It is a joke, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
he should have been suspended. It's not like, I mean, this feud's bombing anyway, and even Vince is apparently aware of that now, which never happens until months after the fact. So
that is interesting. We'll get into here before we hop into the movie discussion. Stein, you've been away a couple weeks and missed a couple discussions about wrestling and the WrestleMania build and all this. What have been your thoughts on it? The creative's definitely taking this year off, wouldn't you say?
They knew they were going to have the one match, and I guess the two, because Brock and Trips, they knew they had the two matches, and then, you know, the buy rate this year is going to be as big, if not maybe a little bit bigger than it was last year. It is.
I don't want that, because it would...
Well, no, but I mean, from the marks are going to... I mean, the marks and the kids, you know, Cena's getting his win back.
Yeah.
Cena was going to get his win back the moment that the ref counted three for Rock last year. And the kids want to see that.
Brock boosts buy rates, so to a certain degree.
If they had some real courage, I mean, we talked about this. Trips has had, in the last 3 years...
Eight matches.
Not including the one he'll have in a couple weeks in New York / New Jersey. What career is he potentially walking away from here?
With his righteous new hedgehog haircut.
That's even better than like Hogan 95 WCW schedule as far as amount of effort that has to be exerted.
So, and they lucked into Paul Bear dying because now they have a program.
Now they have an angle. And Paul Bear is one of the few guys you could say like, no, he would have been cool with it. Because Paul Bear, he's an old Southern wrestling boy. He would have been fine with it.
So it's Mania. Of course, it's a reason to get excited, but me and Chris were just talking about it. It's kind of laughable the way this Mania is being handled.
But, you know, expect the best, hope for the worst, like with everything in life. There's a few matches, the potential to be quite good.
The tag match.
The problem is both Brock and Trips and the Rock Cena matches could be very good, and I hope they're very good. But because there's such an inevitability about them, that tampers any real enjoyment or excitement you can get out of watching it.
Because Cena's winning and Trips is winning. Yeah.
And the problem is, and it goes back to all the bad blood Trips has created for himself over the years, and he's done a lot of goodwill the past few years to try and erase that.
Very true.
I mean, he's done a lot more than he...
He gave us one of the greatest matches of all time last year.
Yeah, he's done a lot more than he's had to try and kind of, you know, very kind of Nixon doing the David Frost interview to sort of fix his place in history, but he still has that lingering resentment from the Reign of Terror and all the stuff he did when, I mean, the company bottomed out with him on the top. It's not, the story here is whoever's facing Brock has to win this match, because that makes sense for the story.
Yeah.
Because Brock has beaten him at every turn, and he's hurt his friends, and he's hurt his family. The problem is that the guy on the other end of that story is Triple H.
and
no one wants to see it, because at the end, it's Triple H winning.
Yeah. And been said, still the most intriguing part of this event is going to be the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jersey. So, I mean, they're Smarks. Already angry that they're there anyway, because they're in fucking Jersey. Or New York / New Jersey, excuse me, because it's not actually happening in New Jersey. the crowd's the most intriguing part. You know, this is a crowd that's going to cheer the Shield.
Boo Ryback.
Boo Ryback, cheer Henry.
We can hope they cheer Swagger and Boo Del Rio for comedic sake.
You suggested, and I hope it would be true, but they give Swagger, like, ridiculous, ironic face heat. I mean, they just make him out to be the biggest motherfucker on the planet for the 8 minutes that match is going to get.
Yeah. Which...
So what do we have locked down so far? And if we need to move on, stop me.
No, no, no. Yeah,
Roxina, Brock and Trips.
Taker Punk.
Taker Punk. The Six-Man Shield versus the Celtic Viper Show. Ryback and Henry.
Swagger Del Rio. Tag match.
The tag title match. I'm looking forward to that. I hope they need to break tradition. And by tradition, I mean the last 2 years of the world title of the show. Because that's a good 10-minute get your crowd going.
Curtis, match. Have you heard the tag match? It's Kane and D-Bry against Ziggler and Big E, the dude that's
Big E is going to Mania.
Man.
That one should be pretty sick. Yeah, that should start the show, because if it doesn't, if the world title starts, it'll eliminate all mystery as to where or Ziggler's going to cash in.
Why haven't they just ended this... this fucking Kane and D-Bry fiasco already. Why don't they just give them...
Because they'd have no idea what the end game is.
Yeah. They just need to give them a Hell in a Cell. Like, all it is, it's very simple. D-Bry needs an ass-whooping badly, and they need to give it to him in the most horrific way possible. I don't care...
Kane throwing Brian through the barbershop window.
Like, that's just what needs to happen. And...
You want to see Kane get his comeuppance. Or you want to see D-Bry get his comeuppance.
Yes, very much.
Regardless, the tag match is exciting, and it's Mania season. It's reasonable because we have a ridiculous Hall of Fame class this year.
Yeah.
And Bruno. We're getting closer. We're going to have...
I was very happy to see Booker getting in there. That's awesome.
King Booker. Did you see they used the We're Coming For You clip during his video?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. But we are getting closer. More of the ROH card is taking effect. And you know TNA is running some house shows that weekend?
I saw that.
Yeah. We'll talk
if they do that in New Orleans next year, we
gotta go.
We might have to.
Yeah. See Hogan coming out. No!
You son of a bitch!
This is all on WrestleMania weekend as well, the TNA stuff?
Yeah.
It's...
What are they...
That weekend every year just becomes so much bigger.
Yeah. It's starting, like, last year was the first year it started on a Thursday and went through Monday. It's like, it's getting fucking huge, man. It's, New Orleans is going to be pretty fun. If we're still doing this little ditty, we'll have to do an on-location podcast in New Orleans next year.
Yeah, that'll be...
We'll just have
you're going to buy Jake a lot of liquor for that.
Yeah. He'll just be walking behind us with the mic.
So, be the guy on the ramp, you know, with somebody behind him rolling up the cable.
We're getting closer in the weeks to come. I think we'll probably have to do a two-parter for Mania because we got to talk about the card and then we got to talk about past Manias.
When was Miami?
Last year.
Was that April? 1st. April?
Yeah.
It's already been a year.
Yep.
I know, right?
Damn.
God.
Greatest weekend of my life. Dwayne won, and we hugged Stein, and it was glorious. So
why isn't The Rock going to win this year?
Because it's Cena.
Because
didn't he beat Cena though?
It's the exact same match.
Doing business. I mean,
yeah. If he does, like the money's in the rematch, and then if Cena wins, which everyone thought last year Cena was going to win, just because it seemed as though they want their guy to go over one of the biggest stars of all time in the business, and it didn't happen. It was supposed to, as some people have said, and then they changed it because they feared an actual riot would happen.
Well, when you saw the way the crowd reacted, I mean, when Rock won.
Yeah. Inverse that.
Yeah, if that had been...
Yeah.
And then Brock's fighting, you said, is that Triple H?
Triple H, yeah.
And didn't they fight in Dallas a few weeks ago? And that's when Brock got bloodied up in the face. I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah, that was like
before my girlfriend made me change the station.
Yeah, that was fun, though.
Trips busted out the 2002 garb.
Yeah, and with his hair. And
he needs to bring back the Kangol, the leather Kangol cap.
The taxi driver cap.
I had a maroon one.
Did you really?
maroon Kangol cap. Yes, I
did. Did you lick your lips a lot too?
Nope.
Oh.
Are you mad that you never got to see this guy in person?
Who's that? Oh, the Ultimate Warrior?
Do what?
You went to a house show, right, or something? You saw.
I don't know. I was 7 years old in Frank Irwin Center. Is that a house show?
Did you take that picture when you?
No.
Like you had great this, seats.
Yeah, this was at. This was. They were showing flashbacks from
WrestleMania 4.
Yeah.
And I paused it.
So sad.
I used to have a little. A doll of him, I guess you could call it, about this tall.
The wrestling buddy.
All muscle.
Yeah. Jim, oh, the one that Hasbro.
Did it talk?
Yeah. No. No, or did it have the little pullback?
Yeah,
I think I did.
Feel the power of the warrior.
Jim Hellwig is who we're talking about right now. The Ultimate
Warrior.
So, the best time
and
of the
his
year.
His Google alerts just went off, and he's going to film a 2-hour promo against us now.
All right, Curtis.
A psychopath.
This weekend in movies, what's we got's coming?
What we got coming out is Admission with the... with Tina Fey and Paul Rudd. It's directed by one of the Weitz brothers. I want to say it's Paul.
Who?
Boy.
Yeah. Who did Tina write this?
No, it's adapted from a novel. She didn't write the screenplay or anything.
Cause she wrote Mean Girls, which is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she wrote Baby Mama, which is a pile of shit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's.
Did you
that's
like Baby Mama?
Baby Mama has moments.
Yeah, I was okay with that movie.
Different strokes for different folks. What? Parks and Rec.
I like everyone on that show so much more than her.
Yeah.
I think every other character is more interesting and funnier than her. She just tries way too hard.
All right, Curtis.
Isn't that her character, though? I would think.
I haven't even seen the trailer for it. I've just seen the poster. I've walked by the bookstore a couple times. Or walked by the book in the bookstore a couple times. Like... I'm embarrassingly out of the loop on that one. Okay. Entertainment Weekly thought it was pretty good.
America loves Paul Rudd, and America loves Tina Fey, so I imagine it won't struggle too much at the box office. And,
America should love Paul Rudd, but he's not made the best decisions the last
they
couple
have,
years.
Yeah.
What was that movie with Jennifer Aniston?
Wanderlust. That was awful.
I never saw it, but I heard.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It was really bad.
Yeah. Well... his co-star.
Again. America loves them both, but they'll both collectively decide not to show up for this thing, I think.
Yeah, the trailer is nothing overwhelming, and I'm inclined to agree.
It looks like your standard rom-com.
Yeah, I'm with Stein. Paul Rudd, for as fantastic of an actor and comedic genius that he is.
He's a good dramatic actor.
He hasn't made the best of choices in the past few years, but then again, the majority of them make a decent amount of money, so he obviously knows.
I heard This Is 40 was good.
Well, you must have heard that from someone that wasn't me.
Apparently This Is 40 actually did. It made some decent coin, I think.
Well, yeah.
It made more than funny people.
I was trying to think if somehow I could turn that into a joke about how you had to pay more money because it was 17 hours long, but I couldn't figure out how to put that together. No, This Is 40 is fucking awful. But that's Judd Apatow. I like Rob Zombie, so I can't cast stones at Judd Apatow.
We forgot about The Croods, the animated movie.
Okay, now who are the voice actors in that? Is Emma Stone?
Emma Stone and Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like prehistoric type.
What
shit,
company is this?
DreamWorks.
Oh. It's probably going to make money. There's no reason to believe that it won't.
Well, it's just like that fucking Escape from Planet Earth. There's been no kids' movies this year, and of course the first ones out of the gate always get a good pop, so it's just...
Yeah,
like,
and that one was also cheaper than most animated movies are to make these days, so...
Which one, Escape?
Yeah, I think it costs like $40 million to make.
Jesus.
Which, if that's
isn't
the
that
budget
weird
for your...
that a $40 million budget is considered low?
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, like, a direct correlation to how ugly it looks in comparison to everything else.
And then you think that Tobe Hooper... took $80,000 and made Texas Chainsaw Massacre, arguably one of the best horror movies.
And on the new one that came out in January, they probably spent, what, $20, $25 making that?
I don't know, ask this fuck, you saw it.
They probably spent more money converting the footage from the original film to 3D than the entire budget
wait,
of the
what?
Original
you never told me that.
Yeah, like, they have some footage from the original film that they convert into 3D.
Ah, sacrilegious.
Doesn't that
break your heart? For fuck's sake. Okay, what's The Croods now? I've seen one trailer for it.
I've probably seen that same trailer.
It's like a prehistoric family type thing, though, right?
Yeah.
Like Land Before Time, or What are we dealing with?
Because Land Before Time is awesome. It looks like a family of like cave people, and
It's animated.
Yeah,
that's a shame because Nicolas Cage is a caveman. It's a license to print money. That could fix our economy right there.
What was the other movie he did?
Just like Season of the Witch did.
Nicolas Cage. Yeah. What was? He was the voice in another animated movie, right?
Ant Bully.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to say ants at first, but yeah, Ant Bully.
He was also voicing Astro Boy.
Yeah.
Oh man, Astro Boy, that was around for a second.
Yeah. We had the poster for that for a year.
That company went bankrupt after Astro Boy. That Imaji.
Who was it?
Did Imaji, the same people that did Ninja Turtles in 2007?
There's a
great moment in the Ninja Turtles movie from 2007 where someone had gotten turned to dust, and some of the dust flew into Donatello's mouth, and he goes, "He's in my mouth," and it made me laugh a lot.
That happened. A friend of mine was moving his dad's ashes, and it got jostled, and his friend next to him accidentally inhaled some of them. So he said, "Just breathe in your dad."
Oh man, that's awesome.
The next logical step in the punk taker feud.
Said friend also once brought his a jar of his dad's ashes to a dinner that we had.
Okay.
Yeah, and
what you're talking about now.
The bill came. And he put the bill under the jar of ashes, and he's like, "Let's go, guys, my dad's got it."
Oh, man, that's so incredible.
People deal with grief in different ways. I hope that's the way I can deal with it.
And then, I told you, I wore that jar of ashes around my neck, because he wanted his dad to be at his graduation, so I had to wear this jar of ashes. And it wasn't like a fucking urn.
Dang.
It was like a jelly jar that wasn't even cleaned out. It just had a bunch of ashes in it.
If you knew this guy, it would make perfect sense.
Well, I was going to ask if it was in a coffee can, but that's even worse.
Oh, no, that's what you said the progression of the punk taker thing should be. At Mania, Taker should, like, try to throw the ashes out, and the wind catches him and blows him back at Punk. All right, Croods, and then hit us with the last one, Curtis.
Oh, Spring Breakers.
So, I'm going to hit the washroom while you run down Spring Breakers.
You don't want to hear what I have to say?
I do, but I have to pee.
Well, then go. We'll wait.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll make myself a drink. Let's just find some debt. Let's just kill some air, guys. Let's just get the ground running.
I'll give the score updates in the NBA while y'all are doing that.
So, this is happening.
Hey,
this is a first. What's up?
Mind if I have some of that?
No.
No,
spring break.
Can I have some of that vodka?
This one?
Yeah.
It's in plastic. Wow.
That's how we do on the Box Ship podcast.
Maybe I should just pour some more of this.
Pour it in.
Now, here we go.
It's Spring Breakers. I see it. It's one of those movies that it's not going to have a lot of middle ground on. People are either going to really love it or really hate it, and I don't think there's necessarily going to be a wrong opinion on it. It's probably the most accessible film he's ever made.
Harmony Korine.
Still very much a Harmony Korine film.
One of the girls, the one who is not the least bit recognizable in terms
That's
of fame
wife.
Level. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just read that today. I was wondering, like, how does that go? Does she acquit herself nicely, or is it one of these ridiculous nepotism things that we'll have to get into when we talk about Godfather 3?
Well, the thing about acting in the film, one of the complaints I heard lobbied against it is that all four of the girls are alike, and there's nothing particularly distinguishable about their characters, but that almost seems like it's the point of the film. They're these vapid girls who have this idealized version of spring break and being a party girl and what life should be, and it's this thoroughly empty vision that they're trying to embrace, so it makes sense that they don't have anything that distinguishes them from one another.
Now,
I heard it's a pretty quotable movie.
Well, James Franco, I'll say it right now, if he does not get an Oscar nomination for supporting actor for this, it's a fucking crime. Because this is, he has one of those...
Are you being, like, genuine?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, his performance, this is one of those characters that everyone who sees it, even if they don't like the movie, I think will like his performance and will be quoting him for years to come. This is just one of those classic comedic performances.
This is going to be one of those endorsements that goes about as well as the time that Mickey Rourke endorsed Eric Roberts. It's not going to matter when. Well, I guess because you know we're us on our podcast, so it's not.
I don't know. Stein has some pull in the industry.
He's in social media.
It's bizarre, but I don't know. I'm very curious to see what y'all. Oh, I already know Benner will hate it, but. And there's a scene where James Franco gets himself captured to further his plot. And at this point, it is a bit hacky. That particular storytelling device.
On a serious level, though, I'm pretty off-put by Harmony Korine. And Gummo to me is just a series of like weird white trash videos.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you already touched on this. I was under the impression the selling point of this movie is it's like the Disney girls and shit doing Spring Break stuff. Now that may not happen in the movie. Is that like what their intention is?
Here's the thing: I guess Selena Gomez is the other above the title with Franco on the thing.
She's hot.
I'm trying to figure out.
You've got to keep an eye out for her.
I don't want to. She broke the Beeb's heart. I don't want to spoil it, and I guess it's not really a spoiler, but she's in about half the movie before her character leaves. And up to that point, there's nothing particularly outrageous that she does. I mean, they have a bunch of party scenes where they're drinking, but like...
Is it the red solo cups?
All three of the other girls... All three of the other girls in the movie, there's scenes where they're doing coke, and a couple of them do nudity. And Selena Gomez...
Vanessa Hudgens?
I think you see the side of a tit.
Ooh!
Because there's a menage... I believe it's called menage a trois.
Well, high school, my musical.
we've all seen Vanessa Hudgens naked years ago, though.
So. Oh, that's right. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. Landing strips.
It was, she was the dude in Shame, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I forgot about the
movie, it comes into focus.
I forgot about that gangbang episode of Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
Selena Gomez is fairly, she plays it pretty straight and narrow.
Well,
nothing.
Her character is supposed to be kind of a bit of the, I saw that, the voice of reason among them, but. You know, a lot of the thing is, like, see Selena Gomez be outrageous and see her, you know, out of control. And, like, the most, I guess, out there thing in the movie is there's a shot during a montage of, like, all four of the girls on the side of a street, like, squatting and peeing because, like, they're out of control and everything. And that's, like, the most un-Disney, sanctified thing that she does in the movie.
Huh.
But the rest of them, like, doing coke and there's gangbangs and... Vanessa Hudgens and Mrs.
Rachel Korine.
Rachel Korine have a three-way with James Franco's character.
Awesome.
So,
and Jeff Jarrett's in it.
And Jeff Jarrett is in it. So it's weird because y'all were at the TNA show the night I saw Spring Breakers, but I was the one who ended up seeing Jeff Jarrett.
Hey-o! So, now, the question is, will this movie draw more than Jeff Jarrett and his illustrious professional wrestling
career? It apparently had a big opening weekend on, like, three screens.
So it's made a dime.
It has. It's made several dimes.
So more than Jeff Jarrett's made.
Jeff Jarrett's drawn. So Jeff Jarrett's probably walking around pretty high and mighty right now in the impact zone. I anxiously await everybody's opinions on it. I think it's going to be pretty divisive, but...
Are we all interested? Hallie, interested in it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? James Franco, I don't know. I haven't seen Oz yet, but I'm pretty on board with most anything James Franco does.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of his.
He is just... He's great in this movie.
Based on the one time that I saw the trailer, would you say that it warrants any sort of comparison to Greg Araki, or is that like a huge disservice to the movie? Because that's sort of the vibe that I get off of the trailer itself.
The trailer sells the movie about as well as any 2.5-minute trailer for it can. You just kind of have to go with it. There's not much of a plot to speak of. you just kind of have to, it's I hate this cliche, you just kind of have to let yourself go along with the ride.
Right on.
And when it goes to credits, and I don't know if it was just me, but when it goes to the end credits, the song they play over the end credits is Lights by Ellie Goulding.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all heard that. It's a good song. But for some reason, how the movie ends and then going right to credits with that song is like the final punchline. So
is it the Bass Nectar remix? There's a bunch of remixes of that song.
It sounds just like the standard radio version of it.
I have that on my iTunes.
Nice.
That version.
And you get your pump just one live. Yeah. I think I've spent way too long on this, but at South By when they screened it, you know, Paramount Theater, 1,200, 1,300 people, big crowd, you know, out to see it, and Harmony Korine comes out. I swear to God, he was wearing sweatpants. It's like your film is playing in front of these people, one of the biggest film festivals in the world, you know, it's a crowd, and he's wearing sweatpants. So that right there kind of says it all.
Nice.
No, I'm right there with you on the just rolling with it thing. Also, I bring it up just because Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters is getting a sequel. It did well enough internationally to merit it.
God. See, that's the international grosses. That's a whole... We could spend a whole podcast on that.
Well, Eddie, former guest of ours, was just talking about the other day. It's so funny when you... Like, it seems like so many people get hung up on domestic grosses, and the big one we were joking about was The Untouchables, the French movie. Which made
did it huge.
Yeah, 388 million worldwide.
It did like 2 million here, and then like the joke he had was like, here it's like, hey, have you seen that French movie called The Untouchables? Yeah, it's pretty good. We're in French. It's like, hey, have you seen the biggest movie of all time?
I actually think that's their second biggest.
Star Wars?
No, they have a bigger
Lando's
one.
Lando's the shit.
They have a bigger movie in France. It's actually called Welcome to the Styx.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jerry Lewis is Welcome to the Sticks.
But
didn't Die Hard 5 make a lot of its money?
Oh yeah, it's played really well internationally, but
I'd still love to know the Monday morning after it came out how many people at Fox lost their jobs.
Because it did really bad.
It bombed.
Yeah. Deservedly so.
Oh, I didn't see a frame of it, but I'm glad.
I feel bad for Hatley over here because he was very much looking forward to it.
Well, I kind of had the feeling it wasn't going to be good. I gave it a chance, and about 20 minutes into it, after
the 15th time he said, I'm on vacation.
Yes.
Well, Live Free or Die Hard was such an unimaginable disaster. Oh, I can't imagine.
You already told me, that line that I used after you walked out?
He said that the fifth Die Hard makes the fourth one look like the first one.
Yeah, it was that bad.
That bad. Because the fourth I hate with a passion.
Of a million suns.
It's not Juno. Let's say 1,000 suns.
Yeah, it's just, thank God it was 1 hour and 38 minutes.
I will give Juno this, though. It didn't have Justin Long in a supporting role.
Thank God.
So it's got that going.
It had the northern Justin Long, Michael Cera. Isn't he Canadian?
That's pretty mean to Michael Cera.
Well. No, because, I mean, if you're going to do things that are, like, apples and apples, as far as comparisons like that go, then you gotta make comparisons to Michael Cera and fucking Jesse Eisenberg. That's the way to go.
That's pretty fair.
Not even in the same league, planet.
Well, one of them was nominated for an Oscar.
And the other one has made a ton of money.
All right, so Spring Breakers definitely has all our interest.
We'll revisit it once y'all have seen it.
I got to see the two latest WWE productions.
You saw Dead Man Down?
Yeah, I saw Dead Man Down in the call.
You were the one.
Yeah.
With wide back.
Dead Man Down had a good opening weekend, Wade Barrett would be wrestling Sheamus at WrestleMania.
Okay. Well, who's the wrestler on the call? Oh, it's David Otunga, right?
Yeah.
Is he actually in the movie?
Yeah, both of them, both David Otunga and
Wade.
Wade, they both essentially are glorified extras. Benner brought up a great moment. He was like,
do they get like movie star entrances in the movie? Like they get establishing shots so the crowd can be like, holy shit, that's Wade Barrett.
I just noticed Wade Barrett at the end of Dead Man Down when he was on fire. And Benner was like, man, he got the worst death of them all. I was like, yeah. Well,
the coat was on fire, and then he threw it off.
I was like, yeah, it was kind of a nothing part. And Bender's like, no, man, he had that really great moment earlier when they were in the middle of that chase. And he goes, he went that way. But David Otunga is Morris Chestnut's partner in the call. And so, like, when they make their entrance, like, he just starts talking to the other lady who works in the nearby cubicle where Halle Berry works. He starts talking to her how he helped some lady deliver a baby. And, like, that's literally, like, the most he does, like, the entire movie.
He doesn't mention that for some reason he was on the card of WrestleMania 28.
Well, when he gets his entrance, is like, you know, they have the wide establishing shot of the call center, and you just hear, away,
oh, but no, the call was pretty. It was pretty aggressively generic.
Okay, like this is an honest question.
The trailer, it's like you don't need to see the movie.
Yeah,
because I saw the trailer in front of Gangster Squad. And it's like, well, I've seen the whole movie.
Well, that and like, okay, Abigail Breslin's the chick in distress, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if her phone had GPS, the movie would be pointless, right?
Yes, that's okay. True.
Now this is my
that's an argument you can't level at anything because. That classic, the stagecoach with John Wayne, the John Ford movie. You know, the whole thing is the Indians chasing the stagecoach, and they just said, you know, if the Indians had shot at the wheels, they would have stopped them. And John Wayne's like, well, then there wouldn't have been a movie. So
touche.
The thriller logic, like any sort of movie like that, you kind of.
I'm pretty sure we could I love Red Eye, but I'm sure there's many ways we could do something like that with that.
Oh, movie. Red Eye, you can fly the plane through the fucking logic holes in that movie. But it's a well-made thriller. It works.
Now, my real question is, and this isn't meant to be comedic, it's just, honestly, I want your opinion, Curtis. Is it embarrassing to see Halle Berry doing shit like this, considering she's an Oscar winner?
No, because she's not a great actress, so she deserves this stuff, for the most part.
So it's more embarrassing that she has won an Oscar.
I mean,
she was very good at Monsters
Ball. She's gone out of her way to prove
it was that Shakespeare in Love.
That we don't need to take her serious or have her around if we don't want to. She just kind of suggests that with her attitude. But this is not really one of those kind of conversations. I mean, she's fine in it. There's a lot of adequateness to the movie. Like, you can't help it. Brad Anderson's your director, so you're gonna get more competence than you want or expect, whether you like it or not.
This is the type of movie, though. It's, I mean, what can you really do as an actor?
It's also from two of its screenwriters are credited with Exit Wounds and 13 Ghosts. So you're also going to get dumb.
Exit Wounds was good.
Exit Wounds, was that Steven Seagal?
Yeah,
That was his last grasp of stardom.
And Tom Arnold.
Yeah, it was his next to last theatrical release.
I enjoyed that movie a lot.
Half past dead.
I watched it many, many times. But at five in the morning.
Now it's
during the summer in high school.
Exit Wounds is Steven Seagal movies are kind of a guilty pleasure for me, and it's in the upper echelon of them.
Dude, that chick in Under Siege has one of the best sets. Yes, of tits
Erica.
Ever.
Aliniak,
yeah.
Ellie May from Beverly Hillbillies.
Without peer.
She was like a Playboy playmate.
Oh yeah, she was.
Like the year before.
It's like she has Coco Austin's ass on her chest. It's fucking fantastic. Now,
just last tangent. I will argue till the day I die. Under Siege is actually a pretty good movie.
No, it's a good movie.
It works for what it is.
Under Siege is made better because of its acting. I don't necessarily consider it to be an overly fun action movie, but it's made better because of the quality of its acting.
Tommy Lee Jones.
He's definitely
they work so well together. Yeah. They're just great.
Like, that whole monologue that Tommy Lee Jones has that explains the difference between revolutions and, what's the other thing?
There's no more Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, or we're talking about, they call it a revolution because it just goes round and round.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really awesome line of dialogue. But
going back a few steps, the call has I don't for the life of me know his name. My boy from The Divide, though.
Michael Eklund.
Yeah. That's my boy.
Whose powers are not quite at the level that they need to be to reach his full unholy union between Ethan Hawke and Kevin Dillon. Because he's clean shaven.
Oh, no.
So yeah, his sort of cageisms are not all there.
So, to get sidetracked here, and to plug The Divide, which is in a fantastic movie. Who is the Milo guy in that movie in The Divide? Milo.
Milo Ventimiglia.
He's like a legit actor. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the guy that played Rocky Jr.
Yeah.
In Rocky Balboa,
which I just recently rewatched and cried.
It's awesome.
Cried for the day afterwards, but you know.
I remember. There's a line, because my little brother, the first Rocky movie he watched was Rocky Balboa, and he wanted to know if Rocky wins at the end, and I was like, no, he doesn't win. I was like, he wins in here. And so, like, later on...
he wins in his shoulder?
Yeah. When we wanted to watch it again, my little brother was like, hey, because he was like 7 at the time, he goes, let's watch the movie where the guy wins in here. And he, like, points to his heart.
That's adorable. Okay, so anyway, the call, we went over it. Dead Man Down.
Oh, now I wanted to say one more thing about the call that's semi-positive. Like, because the phone has no GPS, like, the things they ask the girl to do so they can try and locate her are, like, pretty intelligent things. Like, when they tell her to knock the taillight out and then stick her hand out.
That's so in the trailer, though.
Yeah. Well, but they do this other thing, because... It's not enough for people to be able to find her because they realize that the plates on the car are stolen. So what they ask her to do is, there's some paint cans in the back. They ask her to open one up and start pouring paint out that hole where the taillight used to be so that it creates a trail. Like, they ask her to do pretty intelligent things.
That's what Homer does to track Lenny and Carl to the Stonecutters meeting.
Oh, I've never seen that. But,
yeah. I'm also thinking of the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer adopts the mile of highway. And, like, he's trying to make the lines wider so it's painted over the yellow stripe.
Well, then maybe they're not going for intelligence then. Maybe they're just trying to show you what huge fans of The Simpsons they are. I don't know.
Well,
but
all thrillers, you know, they're kind of based, each one is sort of exists in its own universe most of the time for generic studio thrillers, and they kind of have their own logic. And
okay, now, Dead Man Down, Naomi Rapeface, Colin Farrell, Jesus. And who's the director?
The director is Niels Arden Oplev, who directed
Homeboy from the original.
Yeah, the original Dragon Tattoo.
Now, does Naomi Rapeface get naked?
No, she does not.
And then what's the point of seeing?
You know, see, here's
what I saw the trailer for Dead Man Down. Hadn't heard a thing about it in front of Django, and at the end I was sold because I was like, that looks pretty entertaining. And then the WWE Studios logo comes up because like they have, you know, the credits and like the opening date, and it's like WWE Studios.
Okay, now Terrence Howard's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And
that's your first problem.
Colin Farrell's just the guy caught in the middle type thing.
Well, he works for Terrence Howard's character, and he's got his own revenge that he's slowly brewing. And concurrent, you know, the thing that comes concurrent is Noomi Rapace witnesses Colin Farrell kill someone, and rather than blackmail him, she's like, "Hey, I'm disfigured from this accident I had, and the guy who did it, he's." Skated off with like a very slight DWI conviction, and so she's like, "I want you to kill this guy for me."
Isn't that blackmail?
Yeah. She's blackmailing him, and because he has his own slowly gestating plan of revenge that's running concurrently, he just decides to speed them both up. Although these two particular things are not connected. Like, the guy that hurt her is not a criminal. He didn't do anything to her family. It's just her wanting to get even. Okay. And Colin Farrell is somebody with the metal to do it.
So, and is she struggling the entire movie with her faith? Her unwavering faith?
No.
Prometheus.
Oh.
No, actually...
You know, entire days go by that I forget Prometheus exists.
One of the weird things about the way this movie's written... Like, like you were saying that you were sold on the movie at the end of the trailer. Well, I was sold on it when I figured out who the writer was, because it's the guy that was in charge of the last season of Fringe. He was the showrunner, this guy named J.H. Wyman. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, man, I'm down for this. And it ends up being more of like a revenge drama. Imagine an American take on something like The Professional or Unleashed. And it plays a lot like somebody's take on that. And, you know, going back to being a Fringe fan, did you ever watch Fringe?
No.
You do?
No.
No? Okay, because you go, no. But you did it with, like, the yes motion, so... But, they have a really enduring symbol of true love that is a white tulip. And in this movie, they have, like, a yellow rabbit's foot that felt like their white tulip. And Fringe, like, at its core, is really romantic. And towards the end of the movie, there are, like, crucial moments where Colin Farrell and Noomi Rapace both sabotage the respective efforts to get even. Because they're like, why do we need to kill these people? Like, we've fallen in love. We are, you know, we can heal each other, and we don't necessarily need to murder these people. And it just has this sort of really enduring, like, romantic aspect to it that that I really appreciated. And I might not have put so much stock in it had it not been, you know, from the guy that made Fringe, which is ultimately proving itself to be one of the more romantic visions of the future and fighting for the things that you love.
So, out of the two WWE productions, which one would you say you'd recommend, or would you recommend either?
I would recommend Dead Man Down over that, but despite all the positive things I just said about it, it's over-plotted and convoluted for... And it's not necessary. It's just, it's overplotted and convoluted. It's at least 10 minutes too long. But it's, between these two flaws, WWE is at least getting closer to finding, you know, that formula picture that's going to work perfectly for them.
Obviously heading in a profitable direction.
The call at least actually made a little bit of money.
Colin Farrell,
since I missed the last couple weeks, did I miss his review of The Marine 3?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so just give me a quick couple bullet points.
The Miz gets to fight a legit martial artist, and he gets to win, which I didn't buy. But the best part about that scene is not that he beats a legit martial artist, but someone walks into the room spraying bullets, and it looked like they just should have shredded his back. And that didn't happen either, so...
The Miz was...
If you wanted The Miz to die in The Marine 3, you're not going to get your wish.
If Joel Siegel was still with us, he'd be on Good Morning America, and he'd say, I saw The Marine 3, and it was awesome!
All right, now, closing down here, winding down. We've already gone over an hour. I've been trying to keep these tighter, but... It flows.
I did tell a little bit of a lie a few minutes ago. I have seen a couple episodes of Fringe, and I just couldn't get into it. It was too much like Skyfall. All right, that joke's done. We can move on.
Okay, so just wrapping up here.
We miss you with
a quick Curtis's corner here. Now, basically, just this one because Curtis just watched the Godfather trilogy for the first time ever, so. I think everyone's familiar with the story.
For the first time? I thought you said you rewatched.
No, I watched all three of them for the first time ever.
Wow.
Okay, so we all know the story. We all know the players. We all know the game. Just what were your thoughts overall? Did they live up to what...
Let's go chronologically. Let's start with Godfather.
The Godfather... The first one's great. You've never seen him either?
No.
My favorite...
Have you seen The Godfather, Jake?
Well, I'm a little bit younger than he is, or actually a lot of it younger, but, you know, that's my excuse.
All of us added up, or...
Curtis taught Ric Flair how to party.
Now, my favorite character in the first Godfather is Sonny. I really like Sonny. He's awesome. I really like
Big Pussy.
I think the,
like Mario.
Now, the last hour of the movie suffers without Sonny, but not a lot. I really liked Sonny. I didn't realize how much I missed him until the end of The Godfather Part 2 when he has his cameo and they get mad at Pacino for quitting school and joining the military.
College, get dumb.
Yeah, that's a really good line.
You were saying you thought 2 was baller.
2 was fucking amazing, and I don't know what Roger Ebert's smoking when he talks about how them intercutting between the current day stuff and the stuff in the 20s, how that interrupts the flow of the movie. It all works so well, but apparently
there were
a lot of people that told Coppola that the stuff in the 20s with young Vito didn't work, and he was just like, I don't care.
That's the stuff that everyone remembers.
Oh, look who texted you.
Yeah.
Is that a lady? Hey.
The night?
Is looking
at Jesus. Hey. It's from a TV show we watched together. It's called The client list comes on lifetime.
I thought there was a reason he was wearing a nice shirt tonight.
All
right, so usually it's the mustard-stained polos, but tonight...
Aren't that the one with the stain right there?
Yeah, there's one that has a stain.
It does. I don't know, Stu. I haven't partied with Curtis under a black light, so I don't know.
That's my podcasting shirt.
It looks dark, like I thought it was mustard. Like he had a hot dog. And...
No, it's like a really weird bleach stain, like right there, right by my belly. that's where it falls. Like when I have the shirt on, it's like right there.
All right, Godfather 3. Andy Garcia is the.
He's Sonny Corleone's illegitimate son.
Okay,
and
he has one of those really roundabout plot twists.
I'm glad they
explained like what year the Godfathers were supposed to take place. Because I'm like, there's no way Sonny Corleone's 21. That's just fucking ridiculous.
I've never seen part 3, so.
Yeah.
But
for that reason, I've just heard so many like
Sofia Coppola's.
First scene that Sofia Coppola was in, I was like, she's not that bad. But then they have like a scene on the rooftop.
The dialogue.
The way she's looking at, she's reading fucking cue cards.
Yeah.
I know it. You can't tell me that she's not. And then her big hilarious.
Are we talking about This Is 40 again?
Sofia Coppola's in This Is 40.
No, but his fucking daughters are clearly reading cue cards in that movie.
His, like, her whole hilariously operatic death scene at the end, I'm like, this is where that line between comedy and tragedy blurs, because I'm not even sad. But, now, the third one, like, Chris warned me not to see it, because then the trilogy would end on a down note. It ends on a down note, but not necessarily a dire note.
Where he dies just like the original Dawn?
Our boy Chris.
At
the Chris Lemche.
But no, I mean, it was...
Dixie Carter follows him.
It definitely goes in more of a pulpy, like, obviously operatic direction. But I think it's less fun and entertaining.
The Vatican and it's something else.
That's
another movie.
Yeah, that's
George Hamilton. George fucking
that's
Hamilton
pure
was in a Godfather movie.
That's like the shit with the Vatican
and
the conspiracy theory. That's just it purely veering off into popcorn entertainment territory. Like at that point, somebody had to, you know, somebody understood and exploited the film's place in popular culture, and they just went and they turned it into something like absurd and silly, but not necessarily awful.
I don't think it's a lot of people just flat out hate it. It's not bad. It's not. It's just kind of a mediocre, and it strikes very much as why? Why would you? You made two of the greatest films ever. Why? What would have been almost 20 years after the fact? Make this.
Eli Wallach is really really good in it as well. He's the villain.
Yeah.
Don Altobello, the old homosexual mob boss. But they keep
calling him. That's the last line.
they keep referring to him as the queer. But No, I mean he's really good, man.
And then he replies with, "That's cruel. Now you don't get any cactus candy. No, take a teensy piece."
No, actually, he told me.
No, get him, scouts.
No, he actually told him they couldn't have any cannoli.
This is good. Backing up just a little bit, though, to the first one, talking about bad female roles, and Diane Keaton's fucking baller in part one.
Oh, dude, Diane Keaton.
It was an abortion, Michael.
This is probably Diane Keaton's best role.
Have you seen The Family Stone?
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay, then you know not of what you speak.
I mean, she's just Diane Keaton. I don't like her in Annie Hall. I don't like the Diane Keaton persona. So whenever she's very good in a movie, which she has been, it frustrates me.
Nobody can go against Pacino in The Godfathers the way that she can, dude. She fucking kills it. And
you see the evolution of Pacino though in those three movies. Like the first one, you just see 70s kind of very quiet, very internal. Yeah, internal Al Pacino. And then the second one, he shouts a couple times, but it's justified because, you know, like the whole thing where she tells him she got an abortion and, you know, him kissing Fredo is like, I know it was you. And But then the third one, it's just, it's...
Hoo-ah!
Yeah, it's the Pacino we all know and love.
Oh, yeah.
Just the shouty, overacting Pacino.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's made an art form out of that.
So. That, dude, the final scene with Fredo in part two, dude, anybody had known that John Cazale was going to be fucking, was going to be dead in 4 years, dude, that final fucking scene of Godfather 2 would still haunt people to this day if they'd known that. He's, dude, he just fucking kills it. He's so badass.
So,
where he's hugging his son, and
and he's like, "I'll take you fishing tomorrow."
For this edition of Curtis's Corner, he really enjoyed the Godfather trilogy. You did bring up that you just watched Gone with the Wind. Do you care if we save that? I'd like to have a bigger discussion about that.
Yeah, we'll save it because I might go back and rewatch it. That way, I can arm myself with
more. That'd be an interesting one to talk about. Thank you for watching the Godfather and giving us your thoughts on it, Curtis. What a wrapping us up here. Take us to the plug zone. What are you going to plug this week? What do you got? Can't really plug The Godfather because I'm pretty sure most people have seen it.
Yeah, there's...
Except for Hatley and Jake.
No reason to do that. Oh, man. This movie that me and Hatley watched a few weeks ago finally hit DVD in the U.S. This little number with Sean Penn where he plays a Cure-style rocker called This Must Be the Place. He's his grandfather was...
That looked really bad.
He's like Robert Smith, right?
Yeah.
And he has that...
It's a pretty good movie, man. I was thoroughly entertained by it, and it's easy to forget that it's Sean Penn because he disappears into the character so completely.
Hallie's really well
not a Sean Penn.
I hate
fan
Sean
at all,
Penn, but it's mainly because he
loved this movie.
What did he do? Did he steal a girl?
He's a politics.
Huh? He's what?
Hallie doesn't like his politics.
He's a little too into it and. No one cares what he has to say, but he did really well in this. I thought. I mean, I haven't seen him in a movie since what was the movie he did with
Fast
Pacino?
At Richmond, huh?
What's the one we did? Carlito's Way. Yeah. I haven't seen him since that.
He's awesome in that movie with his super Jufro.
Yeah, shaved back hairline.
And, he's a good actor. I just don't. I'm not a fan of him.
Let's me not forget. I know I brought this up a couple episodes ago, but Viggo Mortensen plays a Mexican in a wheelchair in Carlito's Way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He also plays Leatherface's brother in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3.
Which has Ken Foree.
They're showing that the Draft House this month.
Are they?
It's so bad.
Have you
chainsaws?
Seen it?
Yes.
They don't celebrate Next Generation enough with Matthew McConaughey. That should be on a monthly rotation at the Draft House. But yeah, 3 is terrible. It's not as bad as 2, but it's really bad.
You should watch This Must Be the Place. I thought it was pretty good.
Nice. Is there anything else you'd like to plug here, being the first timer? Anything you've seen? Anything you've heard?
The Last Stand.
The Last Stand. That should be coming out on DVD pretty soon. So
I tell you,
I hope the Arnold run isn't over before it even started again, because I was looking forward to his comeback.
Yeah,
it was really of the movies I've seen this year.
I didn't see The Last Stand though, because I was busy that Saturday and it was out of theaters by Sunday.
So. You got it pretty good there.
The movies I've seen this year, very, very little movies. I'd say The Last Stand and Dark Skies.
Dude, I've heard some good shit about Dark Skies.
Yeah, they're. I mean, no one talks about them, and they didn't do anything in theaters that I know of. But I really enjoyed both of them.
Last Stand's so awesome.
Dude, it's so. I'm gonna buy it on Blu-ray. When it comes out on Blu-ray, I'm buying it.
It's really
Ray Owens, the sheriff.
Dude, it's such an awesome movie.
It always has the most. Middle American names. Yeah. It's great.
Alright, Stein, you got anything to plug this week?
Can I plug a few movies?
Yeah.
Dark Knight. Skyfall. No Country for Old Men.
Jesus.
Inception. Inglourious Bastards. Dark Knight Rises. I'm gonna plug Dark Knight a second time because it's really good. Everyone just Google a film called Rewind This. It was my favorite film I saw at South by Southwest. It's a really fun documentary, and they're working on distribution now, trying to get it all finalized, but just Google it, kind of keep up with it, and just try and get word of mouth out on that.
Excellent. Generationals have a new album dropping pretty soon. So.
Oh, they were a good band. That was a good recommendation.
I got Curtis to check them out. They got a new album coming out, so be sure to check that out. And if you don't already own a
I'm going to have to actually listen to him sometime because you've talked about him for years, but I don't know if I've ever actually heard
the song. We went to see them on my birthday a couple years ago.
Dude.
They played with Dale Earnhardt Jr.
at Emos.
Oh, was that the Generations?
Yeah.
Huh.
They were. I remember that.
I thought that was REM.
I played a song for Hatley. When we fight, we fight.
Where did yeah. we go?
That song's so awesome. It sounds like an oldie.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That's actually for my birthday. If I can go a little longer.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We went to Emos to see Generations for my birthday.
Emos, that's right.
And they were opening for, or they were the mid act for a band called Dale Earnhardt Jr., who's like a big act. And it was their last show of the tour. They had done a nationwide tour, and the Generationals finished their set with When They Fight, They Fight. But Dale Earnhardt Jr. came out on stage, and they had saxophones and trombones, and they played the winds for it, dude. It was fucking...
That's awesome.
It was fantastic. So yeah, be sure to check that out.
Sam came out with the stand-up bass.
Check out their albums, Con Lawn, Actor Caster, if you don't own them already, and then Dive, their album Oceans out. Saw them a couple times in South By. Good shit. Hatley, my boy, you on Twitter?
Always.
Well, good night.
I'm actually on Twitter right now.
Well, you want to plug your handle, or are you going to be like...
Hold on, I've had a couple of them, so let me just...
I thought you were going to read tweets.
That Hatley?
At that Hatley.
All right, well...
That Hatley, all
right. He's that one, so...
All right. Is Benner on Twitter?
No, he's not.
And then follow Curtis on Instagram at Brando814. You get awesome pictures of food.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Thanks as always to our sound guy Jake. Thanks to our opening theme track writer and I don't know, performer Travis Kitchen. Check him out on facebook.com/sharkpartyfreakout.
Hip new band.
Jake, you got anything to plug yet? I've been doing this shit for 6 months. I've been telling you to get something to plug. Alright, so...
Plug Atomic
Tattoo.
Huh?
Our show con.
Not happened yet, so there's no point. But
there's a potential web series in development.
Really?
Yeah. We'll save that for another day, though. So in the meantime, go out, tell the mundo, enjoy life, be merry.
Don't let yourself get captured to further your criminal plot. Because it's just hacky.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hopefully,
hopefully I can come back, and I'll try and put more in the conversation.
Oh, no, you're fine. It's all good. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you on the next edition.
Thanks for taking my podcast virginity.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Box Shift podcast. On your way out, head on over to Twitter and give us a follow at The Box Shift. Maybe even a retweet, help get the word out. While you're at it, head over to dirtsheets.com. Check out our buddies Zach and David's video podcast, as well as many articles about the world of professional wrestling. Head on over to fighthubtv.com for the best and latest in everything in combat sports. And at the end of the day, head on over to the Art of Wrestling podcast at welovecult.com. Support Colt Cabana, support independent wrestling. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.